are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRack Sports. I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer, is covering the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRack Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomillo13.
Trade deadline is coming up. It's on February 8th. And to prepare for it, David and I are doing a two-part Miami Heat trade deadline preview. This is the second part. If you missed the first part, we recommend that you go back and listen to that first because we set the table with everything that you're going to need to know about what we're going to talk about today, which is going crazy with fake trade ideas.
How dare you, first of all, not have listened to part one?
You got to go listen to part one. What are you guys doing? We should just say, get this out of the way, that we are recording this on a Tuesday night. So we record part one and part two back to back on Tuesday night, but we're pushing this to Thursday morning where you're listening to this now, probably. So apologies if anything in this crazy dramatic NBA happened that we're not talking about or sort of alters whatever the players that we're talking about today. So just as a heads up, we do, and because we're doing trade deadline stuff and fake trade stuff, we have some rules. These aren't trades, number one, that we think are going to happen, but are just good trades for either side. So David and I spent some time, we put together some trades that we think would work for both teams, or some trades that maybe doesn't work but are worth talking about. But mostly we're not trying to predict anything. We're just sort of having fun with this thing. And then, of course, it has to match Miami's short-term plans and Miami's long-term plans. We talked a lot about that in part one of this show, of this podcast special here. Miami's short-term plan being that they're going to compete this season. They're going to try to compete in the highest rungs of the Eastern Conference, whatever that might end up being. And then their long-term plan, of course, of ultimately trying to maybe shed some salary later on for next season or just not really – take on any really big, stupid contracts, which we know that they're not going to do.
Yeah. And we should point out also that, this is a great opportunity for all of our listeners to chime in on whether or not you think any of these trades work, whether or not you have questions about them. If there's anything we've learned over the last couple of years of doing this podcast is that our listeners love fake trades, always throwing those into our mentions. So it's something that we appreciate. It's always a great, fun topic for a lot of people. Some people don't like the trade deadline or trade talk in general. That's fine. They're not running this podcast. We are. And as far as we can tell, a lot of our listeners do like it. So chime in. So let us know either via email or on Twitter, and we'll be happy to talk about it.
We'll find you a new podcast if you don't like the trade deadline one. Yeah. So let's start this thing off with a bang. How about that? Because at the top of the news, or near the top of the news, is this whole Kevin Love situation. In Cleveland. And the more I think about the Cleveland situation, moving Kevin Love might not be a bad idea for them. He's not helping their defensive issues, certainly. He's a good player for them. He's got two more years after this on his deal. And so even though I think he can opt out in that final year, if I'm not mistaken, but he might be able to be had for the right price here. And if you're Cleveland, if you can move him to maybe get the right sort of guys, some three-point shooting, some perimeter defense, some rim protection, that might make them better this year in this final year of LeBron. So starting this thing off with a bang, the Heat get Kevin Love and the Cavaliers get Whiteside and Winslow.
Yeah, it's a fun trade to consider, to be honest with you. Obviously, look, I think the Kevin Love situation, and I think we should bring it up for our listeners, if for whatever reason you weren't aware of this, Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN tweeting out and filing a story on the fact that earlier this weekend that Kevin Love left a game at halftime, did not come back, missed that practice the next day. And so the team kind of felt like he was, let's say, not committed to the team's pursuit of a four straight trip to the NBA Finals. So there's some issues there. And obviously, they've struggled a lot lately. 9 of 12 games that they've lost, the last 12 games. They're struggling defensively, as you pointed out. So there is issues there. And I guess Kevin Love, for whatever reason, the way he's been for the past 4 years, seems like the guy that's always on the scapegoat end of any kind of concerns regarding Cleveland. So they'd be looking to move him. I think he'd be a great fit as far as this trade is concerned. I think Miami's a really nice opportunity for him. Look, he doesn't strike me as a Miami guy. He's from Portland, Oregon. He spent about 6 years of his career in Minnesota. Maybe he's looking for a change. You know, he's got that modeling career going. Maybe Miami is a nice, appealing place for him. You know,
there's a few Banana Republics in Miami. He could
absolutely
do just fine.
Yeah, I'm sure him and his supermodel girlfriend will have plenty of fun in Miami.
That's the key. If the girlfriend wants to go. Not that it's necessarily up to him, but I think he would be a good fit for Miami. First of all, I don't think Cleveland uses him right, and it drives me crazy when I watch the Cavaliers games. You look at what the Spurs have been doing with LaMarcus Aldridge this year, really sort of leaning into his strengths, which are mid-range, post-scoring, rebounding, and just letting him be a big body. And then they just throw Pau Gasol in there to sort of be the center sometimes so that LaMarcus Aldridge can kind of come off and play in the block and a little bit more of that four spot. I think Cleveland needs to do that with Kevin Love. Lean into what he's doing well. I mean, even the Heat did that with Chris Bosh, really more so during the early days of Chris Bosh. They let him get into the post, what he was used to doing in Toronto. And as Bosh evolved, they started to move him around the perimeter. And Bosh actually got more comfortable playing that triple threat position a little bit more in those latter years in Miami. But I think the Heat would be able to, like they did with Bosh, like they've done with so many people, play to Kevin Love's strengths and get him in better position. As good as and Kevin Love's having an all-star type season this year, as good as he's been, I think he could be playing better because he's basically doing that while playing the Ryan Anderson role for Cleveland. And I think there's a lot more to kind of unearth in that Kevin Love situation. And so if you swap him for Whiteside and Winslow, right, you're losing your starting center, but you could play Love with Olynyk. You could play Love with Bam, which I think would be the more optimal pairing. If you wanted to play Love at center, which I wouldn't recommend, but you could play him next to James Johnson. There's options there. And that would be kind of an interesting situation for Miami, who we know doesn't have that all-star player. And you can get that in Kevin Love. And I think that would make them – I think this would make the Heat better. And I think it would make Cleveland moderately better. I think there's ways that you can kind of riff off of this trade. Maybe Cleveland would want to include a Channing Frye from Wayne Ellington swap if you're Miami. I don't know that would keep you from getting a guy like Kevin Love. And then that would add some three-point shooting for Cleveland. Maybe they'd want something else like that. But that this could be the foundation of a trade that makes sense for both sides.
I agree 100%. I think it's a really good deal. I think, you know, obviously Cleveland's woes aren't an offensive one. So losing Love, I think as much of a blow as it'll make there, I think they can – supplement that in other ways. And I think Whiteside will make up a big difference. Look, their rim protection is just absolutely woeful. I mean, Oklahoma City with a guy like Steven Adams down low just exploited the hell out of their small front court. And they're going to bump into guys like that in the playoffs this year for sure. I mean, not teams like Golden State necessarily, but in the Eastern Conference, you know, teams like the Toronto Raptors or Milwaukee, or, you know, if Milwaukee makes a deal for DeAndre Jordan, you want to be able to match up with somebody like that. Look, Al Horford versus Hassan Whiteside would be an interesting matchup in the playoffs as well. So you'd want to do whatever possible. You don't sacrifice much wing depth for Cleveland. So,
and Whiteside hasn't done bad in those Horford matchups either lately. We should mention before we move on to the next trade we have listed here that Whiteside doesn't necessarily help in the transition issues that we know Cleveland is having per se, but I think he, or it might not seem like he does, but I think he would, only because he's going to get more of those rebounds for you. He's going to limit some of those transition opportunities that other teams are getting against Cleveland. And obviously, if you could just sort of slow the game down and just protect the rim a little bit more with somebody and just go big, which I think Cleveland needs to do, is just be bigger. Because even if they make a move for Whiteside, it's not going to solve all of their issues. Our next trade here.
Oh, sorry.
Which I think is a – go ahead.
No, I was going to throw in there the only – I think the biggest issue with this one would be the presence of Dwayne Wade in Cleveland. I wonder if he's comfortable. I mean, obviously not his decision, but he can't influence LeBron, who we know can influence the Cleveland front office. So I wonder whether or not that would dissuade them from acquiring a guy like Hassan.
The Wade thing is actually interesting because he had such a good rapport with Whiteside. I wonder if he'd be like, oh, it's for Whiteside? All right, bring him on. Yeah. Like, I throw dope lobs to that guy. This next one I think is a little bit more realistic. whatever that means in this context. Wesley Matthews for Hassan Whiteside. Dallas has to throw in a future first round pick, or something like that, a first rounder or second rounder, some whatever draft pick compensation comes of it. But really, what the Heat are getting is Wesley Matthews, who is a good 3-point shooter, a defender who could switch on the perimeter. He could play shooting guard next to Josh Richardson. And that's an interesting wing tandem that I think could be really dangerous and gives Miami a little bit more of that 3-point shooting that they just don't have outside of Wayne Ellington so much, a consistent 3-point shooter, a 3-point specialist, I should say. I think Matthews would fit in really well in Miami, add some more of that wing depth that Miami doesn't necessarily have. They have like guard depth. They have like ball handler depth, but not necessarily wing depth and especially guys who can defend at a high level like Wesley Matthews. And Matthews is an expiring deal next year, so you're going to save a little bit more money long term. And if you're the Mavericks, you're getting that rim protect. We know that they were already interested in Whiteside when Whiteside was a free agent a couple summers ago. They've been searching for that rim protector ever since they let Tyson Chandler go. And I think he would fit in with a lot of what Dallas wants to do. Now, obviously, Dallas is forward-looking. They're not going to trade this year's pick because unless it's heavily protected, because it's going to be really high and they're going to get another player, another possible star player to pair with Dennis Smith Jr., who's been really good for them. But Whiteside can play center. That moves Dirk back to power forward, his more natural position. That can move Harrison Barnes up to small forward, which some would argue is his more natural position. And then going forward, when Dirk retires, you can move Harrison Barnes back to the four, play Whiteside in the middle, give him a good pick and roll partner with Dennis Smith Jr. And you're not really giving up a whole lot for that kind of presence. If you're Dallas, you're only giving up Wesley Matthews. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a better trade for Dallas than it would be for Miami, to be honest with you. I'm not sure what Matthews, you know, he's got a great reputation as a defender and willing 3-point shooter and everything else like that. He's shooting 38% this season. I think the injury concerns are still legitimate considering what he went through a couple of years ago. He's never quite looked as fluid as he did while he was with the Portland Trailblazers before the Achilles injury. So, I don't know if he'll ever get back to that point, but you're right. You make an interesting case that maybe he could make a nice tandem alongside of Richardson. I think it'll work. I think it would work for both teams, to be honest with you, although I think they'd get more out of it. I'm not sure if Nowitzki is capable of playing power forward at this point, right? I mean, given his health and just his general age, I don't know how much that would work, but it's a move for the future.
Yeah, exactly. It's a move for the future. I don't even know how important it is. If Dirk sucks at power forward this year, it doesn't really matter. You know, they're bad. They're not going to be. All right. Well, next we're going to get to some more minor deals that don't involve us on Whiteside, because I think we've spent maybe 35% of this entire season talking about Whiteside trades. But first, before we do that, if you run a company and you're unhappy with your ROI with traditional advertising online or in print, try something new in 2018 and advertise with us here on Locked On Heat. National brands like SeatGeek, Draft, and MyBookie are already advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for local South Florida businesses to connect with Heat fans. Podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers than from traditional form of media, and the number of people listening to podcasts is growing every year, as opposed to people reading newspapers or listening to radio, for example. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockdownheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. Okay, so we've got a blockbuster sort of trade later on. We're going to get to that. It's like not quite. I mean, the Heat aren't getting LeBron or Kevin Durant, but it's sort of a blockbuster trade later on. But we wanted to talk about, before we get to that, some of those more minor deals, maybe some of the fringe deals that don't necessarily get talked about a lot when we kind of anticipate the trade deadline, but by all means happen all the time. In fact, they happen more often than the superstar trades happen. So on the first part of this podcast, David, we talked about and we sort of ranked the most valuable trade assets that the Heat have. And you and I agreed that Wayne Ellington is probably their most valuable asset just because of the fact that he's on a easily digestible expiring deal, and because he provides so much value as far as spacing the floor, and we could see him going to a team that's contending. So we thought about a few teams that could use Wayne Ellington, and the one we came up with was Cleveland, who doesn't necessarily have spacing in that backcourt with guys like Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose getting so many minutes back there. You throw Wayne Ellington into the mix there. They have a contract in Channing Frye that matches almost perfectly. And you attach maybe Cleveland's first. Obviously, the Heat aren't going to get that Brooklyn Nets pick. But that's a deal that makes sense to me, is Channing Frye and a first-round pick, Cleveland's first-round pick, which is going to be somewhere in the high 20s. It's going to be at the end of the first round. But Frye and a first for Wayne Ellington if Miami decides that they need to cut bait on Ellington as opposed to losing him for nothing over the summer.
Yeah, it does make sense. I think Cleveland could obviously use some more three-point shooting there, like you pointed out. He's a solid defender, so he doesn't, provide any, he's not a weakness in that aspect, so I think it makes a lot of sense for him.
He's a better defender than a lot of guys in Cleveland. And then I think in that situation, Miami might buy out Channing Frye just because I don't know if they have a place for him, or they just keep him because he's a fun guy to have around. Minnesota was another one we thought of. Wayne Ellington, who's once played for the Timberwolves, maybe a return back to the Minnesota for Bielitsa. And Minnesota doesn't have their first round pick, but they do have OKC's protected first round pick, protected for the lottery. So maybe Bielitsa and OKC's protected first or one of Minnesota's 2018 second round picks.
Yeah. Good deal for them.
Good deal for them. And again, it would be under the circumstance that Miami decides that they want to cut bait on Wayne Ellington, which you and I don't think is going to happen. So we have one other sort of Ellington trade that involves another Heat player. This one is Wayne Ellington to the Jazz along with James Johnson for Derek Favors' expiring contract and Rodney Hood. And we know now that the Jazz are shopping Rodney Hood. He's a restricted free agent next year, did not accept the extension that they offered him at the earlier this year. So maybe they want to get rid of Rodney Hood early, which seems to be the case. Capable scorer, can shoot from three, has the athleticism and size to be a good defender, even though he hasn't been necessarily lived up to expectations on that end of the floor. But I think Miami could get the most out of him. I'm really intrigued by Rodney Hood, to be honest. I think he could be a really good fit at small forward at 6'8", 200 plus pounds. Like, he's got the size you want at that position and the length that you want at that position. And he would help maybe facilitate a move of Josh Richardson back to shooting guard, his more natural position. And a wing tandem, not unlike that Wesley Matthews thing, but kind of like a younger version of that with Rodney Hood, a guy that maybe more falls in line with Miami's young pieces. Dragic at point guard, Richardson at the two, Rodney Hood at the three, and then whatever front court combination that they decide on is really intriguing. And then Derek Favors, he's making $12 million this year, but he's an expiring deal that comes off the books. So basically you're trading what amounts to James Johnson for Rodney Hood, because we already kind of accepting that Wayne Ellington's not going to be back next summer because of the whole next season, because of the whole cap situation with him. It's a really interesting move. And if you're Utah, you're getting a four who could play next to Rudy Gobert, which they simply do not have that right now, that we know that they're in the market for a stretch four. James Johnson fits that, gives him some of the ball handling that they lost when Gordon Hayward left, and Wayne Ellington's a nice shooter for them. Maybe that helps them make a playoff push this year.
Yeah, I think that's a good move for Utah. I'm not a big Rodney Hood fan. I see everything that you're saying as far as, obviously Miami could use some depth in the wing position. He's a guy who has that kind of length that translates into a potential positive defender. I just see too much inconsistency from him. And I was there in Orlando earlier this season when he was just lighting up, where he shot, I think, like 9 threes in the third quarter and absolutely obliterated the Magic, where they had no response. I think that might have been the first real loss that kind of sent them, reeling for the last couple of months. I see him as a guy with potential, but far too much inconsistency. So I'm not sure if Miami's willing to make a move like that. The Derek Favors acquisition, that's a tough one to handle too, because again, you lose a lot of ball handling with James Johnson. But I could see if they're convinced that Hood is their guy. And I wonder, has Hood had a big game against Miami so that maybe they might say this is a guy on their radar? I don't know. I'm curious. It's an interesting one, but I'm not sure if Hood is the centerpiece for this deal for Miami.
Yeah, it really does depend on what they think of Hood. Another positive for that, if you're Miami, is you're going to save a little bit of money depending on what Rodney Hood, if you'd obviously, well, I mean, maybe not obviously, but you'd preferably want to re-sign Rodney Hood when he becomes a restricted free agent this year.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know how much he's going to make. If you could kind of bring him back for somewhere around $12 million a year, which it seems to be the going rate for those sort of guys, Maybe you start him off on a smaller contract at like around 9 or 10, and it kind of builds from there. Something similar to where what they signed Josh Richardson to,
right,
his extension. If you could do that, you're going to save a little bit of money, and that can help in their cap situation that we talked so much about in part one. And as far as that cap situation goes, if Miami is looking to just shed salary, that gets a little dicier outside of just trading Wayne Ellington for whatever the best pick you can get. We came up with Philadelphia.
Right.
Gets Deion Waiters and Justice Winslow for Amir Johnson's expiring, which you and I both would barf in our own mouths and hate. I would hate that so much, but it would shed a lot of salary. And I can't imagine. I'm not sure Philadelphia would do Deion for Amir straight up. I don't think they would sacrifice that future cap space for a guy coming off of an ankle surgery, even as good as the Philly cheesesteak return would be as a story. Yeah. But you throw Justice Winslow in there, who would fill a nice need for them as a wing defender who could kind of come off the bench behind Robert Covington, just for Amir Johnson's expiring deal. I think that that would get them intrigued.
Yeah, it's a good deal for Philadelphia, I think, because I do see that Deion would probably thrive there. I could see him if he bounces back and he's healthy, obviously. I think he'd be a really valuable scorer for them, a guy who, you know, kind of gives them a little bit more courage, a little bit more swag in key moments there, which I think they've been missing. And a guy like Winslow, you know, he's another young player that I think we pointed out fits alongside the timeline of that team. And you know, a guy like Embiid and Šarić and Ben Simmons and everybody else, you know, I think he fits in. I was going to say that, you know, he was ex-teammates with Jahlil Okafor, but Okafor is no longer there, so it doesn't really matter.
For Miami, it would save Miami $13 million next season. And that's all it is. And you save $13 million next season. You're not even worrying about the luxury tax as much. And you're just one more move away, one Hassan Whiteside trade really away, or a Tyler Johnson trade, which is impossible. But like you're one Whiteside or Dragic trade, for example, away from having actual cap space. So if Miami wanted to get there, this would be a major step in that direction. And for Philadelphia, by the way, even if they didn't want Deion Waiters later on, they have enough draft picks in the future to attach to Deion and sell somewhere else. You know, they could get rid of Deion much easier than Miami can right now.
Yeah.
And obviously it would take somebody like Winslow to do that. All right. Next up, we've got a deal with the Bucks. But first, quick reminder, make sure that you're subscribed to Locked On Heat on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. And make sure that you're following us on Spotify. You can listen to us there on the go. And don't forget, leave us a review on iTunes. It helps other Heat fans discover the show. Heat fans like Franco Madrid. He says, really informative and good points of view.
Nice.
Short and sweet, concise, and informative. And I like his point of view. Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay. Here is the blockbuster-ish trade, this mega-ish deal. All right. We've talked about Whiteside to the Bucks quite a few times on this show. The Bucks, we should mention here, have just fired Jason Kidd. That might be the trade that they make, so to speak. That might be what they do here. They're swapping out head coaches. I'm not sure how interested they are in making a move that would sort of shake up the rotation in the roster after just firing their head coach. And their new head coach might say, hey, don't make a trade just now. Let me see what I could do when I get my hands on these guys before you start making a move. That said, maybe Milwaukee is ready to really shake. They could go the other way and say, no, we've seen enough, and we've got a window with Giannis as good as he is right now. We're going all in. We're making moves. And they decide that they don't want to wait the Jabari Parker thing out. They're done with Jabari Parker, as good as he's been. He's not helping them now. They're not totally convinced that he bounces back from injury. They're willing to part with Jabari Parker. They've made that decision. The Heat call. They offer Whiteside for John Henson, Jabari Parker, and Rashad Vaughn for salary-filling purposes. And that's the trade.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, aside from coveting Hassan, I think if Milwaukee is willing to part with a player that's as crucial to them as Jabari Parker, it kind of gives me the vibe similar to what Boston was able to do with Isaiah Thomas, where they know perhaps a more full extent of his injury. Mm-hmm. And maybe they're convinced that this is a player that will never bounce back. Like, he's in a very difficult position now because he enters restricted free agency. He's had these two incredible injuries to his knees there, and you don't know what you're going to get out of Parker. And there's a very realistic chance that he'll never be the kind of player that we saw flashes of last year or the year before that. And you know, it's difficult for Milwaukee to make that kind of decision. Maybe they're saying to themselves that they're not willing to take a chance and they can't offer him a lot of money. They're going to lose him in free agency anyway because they're not going to overpay for him. Given his injury history, they don't want to be, you know, tied down to that kind of money concern. So maybe they're willing to move him for something that they do actually need. You know, Parker hasn't played all season for them. They could get a guy like Whiteside, have him go in there to the starting lineup right away and make immediate contributions there. So it's an interesting deal. I think from Miami's perspective, you take a chance. I think you can get something out of Henson, even though he's getting a lot of money this year. I think for Parker, I think he's important enough and he represents like a really key part of this team moving forward in the future. Look, you know, James Johnson would become expendable, I think, if you get a guy like Jabari. So maybe it's the first of a couple trades or you move James Johnson down the line. You know, Parker's scheduled to be back.
You'd have to make a move.
Yeah.
You'd have to make a move if you're the Heat because of that, just because of the depth in that front court. But also, if you pay Jabari Parker this summer, which you better if you trade Whiteside for him, they're going to be, again, that they're going to be paying the luxury tax. And that's even with Parker, the team's not good enough. I think you move Henson in a way that you would move Waiters. You attach Winslow to him because now Winslow's a little bit more, even more so expendable after Jabari Parker is acquired. You know, he could play that 3 and 4 spot. Just like Winslow can. So maybe you attach Winslow to John Henson and move Henson and you get off of that deal or James Johnson or whoever it might be to get off of that deal. And that's what – and so you're basically adding Jabari Parker and saying, no, you're going to be our scorer. We're going to have Parker, Josh Richardson as our young guys that we're really going to build around and Bam Adebayo, obviously, if Whiteside's gone. It seems like a really interesting deal if Parker sort of turns out. And you're saying that they should do it because there's a chance that just for the chance of Parker's upside, I imagine.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I wonder if you can make a 3-team deal with like where Henson would go, kind of like how we suggested before, like maybe go to
Philly.
Go to Philly, and then Miami would take on Amir Johnson's contract, and so that you know that comes off the book this season.
That would be the perfect move.
Yeah, and they'd get
I think Philly could use rip protector.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Philly could use both of Henson plays the games that Embiid doesn't.
Right. Yeah.
And then as far as other blockbuster-ish, man, I'm telling you guys, David and I tried the CJ McCollum trade so many times. We spent so much time before we started recording this trying to figure it out. It doesn't make sense. And a lot of people would say, no, do Whiteside for McCollum. No, the Portland doesn't break up that backcourt for that. They need more. You could start talking about Whiteside and Winslow. That would really, I think, be the foundation of it. I just don't know, man. Like, it's just tough. I don't think that Portland breaks it up for that. If they were to put McCollum on the block, I think they could just get so much for him. You know what I mean? Like, he is such a gifted offensive player. I think they can get more for him than just Whiteside and Winslow, basically.
Now we should bring up, you know, just as we did with the Kevin Love situation in Cleveland, a lot of Heat fans I saw kind of tweeting about this, that Dame Lillard recently sat down with the team owner to kind of get an understanding of what this team was doing and how they were going to be moving forward. From everything we've heard after the fact, it seems like it was a positive meeting for them. And it was just like an open line of communication between the star player and the owner. But everybody, of course, and this is as we're approaching the trade deadline, kind of inferring that maybe he's disgruntled, maybe he's unhappy with the team. And if that's the case, that maybe he'd be willing to seek a trade or maybe he'd push for a trade, something along those lines. I don't know that we want to necessarily go there. And I think another thing, too, is a lot of Heat fans, they don't really know much about McCollum. I think they don't watch a lot of Portland games because he's so, you know, because of the West Coast difference, you know, there. You know, obviously, you watch a lot of Trailblazer games, or at least you used to. I think you still watch them quite a bit.
I still do.
Yeah. I mean, he's a fantastic player. He really, really is. So, I mean, I think he could be a centerpiece for this team moving forward. If there's any way of acquiring him, I think you certainly do that. We just couldn't find any realistic option for it, to be honest with you. It's not like you can just trade, you know, salary cap filler for a guy like McCollum. He is one of those borderline all-star players, you know. Dame Lillard's an all-star, but McCollum is right there. And to be honest with you, I think McCollum might be a better shooter than Lillard is. Maybe Lillard's a better overall player, but I think McCollum's a better overall I think, player than he is, or maybe a better overall shooter. I don't know. It's tough to say with him.
He's got like a deeper bag of tricks, I think, offensively than Lillard does. Yeah. It's just what Lillard does really well. I think he just does really, really well, which is drive and then just hit threes in the biggest moments. I don't think Portland would part ways with Lillard only because I find it hard that they would trade a guy. If they had to trade one of them, I think they trade McCollum. And I think McCollum would honestly have more value. I think there's a lot of people who think that McCollum is a better player than Lillard. But what Lillard means to that city and that organization, I just think it would be so hard for them to do that. And at the same time, I think, you know, if you're the Heat and you acquire a guy like McCollum, you acquire a guy like McCollum to basically lead your offense. This isn't a guy that you're going to pair with Dragic in that backcourt. Yeah. I just don't think that that's a viable thing. They're both not good defensively or good enough defensively to do that. I think you need to have at least one of the because if you do that, you end up basically being Portland. A worse version of Portland, because as much as we love Dragic, he's not Damian Lillard.
Yeah.
So if you're Miami, maybe the move then is a three-team deal where you're sending Whiteside to Portland and then you're sending Dragic elsewhere. Maybe you're sending Dragic to, I don't know, Denver or Utah for a bunch of assets and young players. And those assets and young players go to Portland as along with Whiteside. And then all of a sudden you're able to get McCollum in that sort of deal because you're parting with Whiteside and Dragic.
Is Ricky Rubio the kind of point guard that could play alongside a guy like CJ McCollum? The thing is about Rubio, and I think, he's obviously known for his defense and his passing ability. Both of those aspects have taken a step back as he's continued to age. And his shooting is just such a problem that I don't know that he fits into this league anymore. You can't have a point guard that can't score or shoot from the perimeter, and Ricky is that guy. So I don't know if he's necessarily a viable option, but it seems to me like he's the kind of complementary type point guard that would fit alongside a guy like McCollum. And maybe you're willing to make that accommodation. Maybe you're saying McCollum's going to be a 30-point-per-game guy, and then Ricky can just somehow thrive without being able to score from the perimeter. I don't know if that's realistic, but maybe that's what maybe that's the vision they could hold for something like that.
Well, I think if you acquire McCollum, I think he's your point guard. I just don't know that you're adding another point guard. I think that if you have McCollum, he's your point guard, and then you're adding, and then maybe you're moving Josh Richardson, who could be the defender of that backcourt, you know?
And swing Goran to Utah for Rodney Hood?
Something like that.
Oh, so you
maybe, or just out. Or you play if you don't have to part with Winslow, maybe you've got McCollum, Richardson, and Winslow as your sort of backcourt and wings, something like that. But McCollum, I think, and you know, I've watched quite a bit of him. He could play point guard. He just doesn't because he does when Lillard's not in there and they stagger their minutes a lot in Portland. He's basically the point guard, and then he mostly plays shooting guard because Lillard's there. Yeah. I'm trying to figure it out right now, just like kind of on the fly here. If Portland were to trade, let's see. If they were to trade, it would take a little bit of finagling. But they would basically – McCollum could go to Miami. Portland would get Whiteside, Wilson Chandler, who would fill a nice need for them. Mm. And Denver would get Dragic. And you'd have to move a few more salaries around. But you could get there. And I don't want to spend all the time right now to do it. But
what? Then Will Barton back to Portland?
You could do Will Barton back to Portland. That might work. If you do Will Barton back to Portland and then send – you'd have to send one other salary probably. Let me see if that'll work. Yeah, you're going to have to send one other salary, and the Miami would have to probably take back another salary, and then you can get there. Mm-hmm. That could work. Something like that. I don't know if these teams are in that mind frame to do that. I don't know. Again, I think Portland could probably sell McCollum for a little bit higher, but if they like Whiteside, we know that they chased Whiteside in free agency a couple seasons ago. Wilson Chandler, like I said, a nice scoring wing for them who could play the three and the four. He's got a couple more years under his contract. Get a couple more young prospects from Denver. And now we're talking. If you're Portland, at least, and if you're Denver, if you're able to get Goran Dragic out of this deal for basically just prospects, and you don't have to get rid of a Jamal Murray or somebody, I think it's a no-brainer. If you're Denver, I don't see anybody on that roster you wouldn't trade. And if you're Miami and you can get CJ McCollum, even if it's trading Whiteside and Dragic, hopefully you're able to get some draft picks or young player, like a draft pick or a young player back or something like that in return to really make it worth it, because I don't think it's worth it just for those two guys for McCollum. It's too much. So if you can get back something like an Emmanuel Mudiay, that's not even worth it. He's not good. I don't know. Something back. You'd have to get something else back. But that's kind of the framework that we're working with.
It's not easy. I don't envy the Heat front office, or any front office for that matter. I mean, it's very rare that you get you pull off a deal that seems like an immediate landslide. You even look to a trade like this summer, where the Indiana Pacers sent Paul George to Oklahoma City, and at the time, I think the Pacers were blasted for it, and nobody expected Victor Oladipo to make any kind of leap. Domantas Sabonis was an interesting player, but not really a productive one in Oklahoma City, playing alongside Russell Westbrook and Steven Adams and such. So now look at them. Sabonis is a key figure for that team. Oladipo's an all-star. Very, very interesting there. So it's tough to predict how these trades will make, how it'll shape up in the future. The thing with Miami is that they've always looked to acquire a player who contributes right away. Like he fits an immediate need there. They've never made that kind of deal where it's like, oh, let's have a player who might blossom in the future. At least none that I can think of, to be honest with you. It's always been about filling an immediate need. Even a guy like Dragic, an established player, and you kind of mortgage a future, two first round picks. That's another thing too, is like every time everybody brings up that trade, it's like the market has shifted so much in the 2.5 seasons since then. I mean, at the time I remember podcasting about it and thinking, hell yeah, it's a great deal. It was absolutely a smart decision for Miami to trade as many draft picks as possible because they had Chris Bosh, because they were going to compete for a playoff spot. And unfortunately it didn't work out for them. But at the time it seemed like a very savvy move from Pat Riley.
Yeah. I don't know. If there's a trade that's done at the deadline, I think it's going to be something more minor.
Yeah, I agree.
Something that, and to be honest, only minor to the point where it clears a couple of roster spots so that they can use those exceptions that we talked about in part one of the show. They've got that $4.3 million room exception that they still haven't used since the summer. We thought that they were saving that for the buyout market. They still have it, and buyouts are about to happen, and there will be guys that get bought out. And then there's the their disabled player exception that we expect that they will have, which will be worth about $5.5 million. So they can use either one or both of those. They can't lump them together to make one super exception, but they could probably sign. They could sign players with. They could sign up to two players on those exceptions, on those separate exceptions. I think just if we're gonna do quick predictions before we wrap this thing up, I don't think that they make a move. I think that they cut AJ Hammonds, maybe stretch his salary a little bit to basically a cap hit over the next couple seasons that would be essentially nothing because he's making a minimum deal, or O'Carroll White if they need another spot, and they end up signing one or two guys on the buyout market, probably a three-point shooter, another three-point shooter, and then maybe just one switchy wing defender. If maybe it's Derek Jones Jr., maybe they let him go back to Sioux Falls, and bring up maybe a more veteran guy that can contribute maybe more in a playoff run. But I think that's sort of where they go.
I'd have to agree with you. I just don't see a big move in the horizon. And I know that we always think of Pat Riley as swinging for the fences. Maybe he's getting somewhat more conservative. He took a chance this summer that seems to be paying off for now. I think a lot of people blasted him for re-signing a lot of these players and Kelly Olynyk and bringing them on such high salaries, but it mostly paid off. And I think you could probably justify the Deion Waiters signing, as troubling as it's been, based on the fact that he had an injury issue and that maybe they had thought he was going to bounce back a little bit better than he actually did. And otherwise it was a good savvy move. So I wonder if he's maybe a little bit more conservative, or maybe that's just not part of their plan. Like it's really hard to predict what Miami will do, but I'd have to agree that they probably don't make a major move at all. Not this time.
If not right now. And if they do make a move, and I think they're going to make a move to shed salary. I don't know what the move is, but again, they have to, or else they'll be paying luxury tax next year. I think that move comes over the summer when it's a lot easier to do this and you don't have this deadline bearing down on you.
I agree.
All right. We'll be back tomorrow with a recap of Thursday's game against the Kings, but that's all we have for today. That wraps up our two-part trade deadline special. Of course, as the trade deadline approaches more and more, we're going to keep talking about it, but that's sort of that's the groundwork. That was everything that we needed to get out there, and that's all we have right now. So thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising, by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, dude.
You got it, Wes.